Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 8. Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu, text number 8. Sankhyayana Paramahamsya Mukhyo
Sankhyayana Paramahamsya Mukhyo
Vivakshamano Bhagavad Vibhuti
Vivakshamano Bhagavad Vibhuti
Jagadasosmad Gurave Vidhaya
Jagadasosmad Gurave Vidhaya
Parashrayata Brihaspatesha
Parashrayata Brihaspatesha.
Translation. The great sage Sankhyayan was the chief amongst the transcendentalists, and when he was describing the glories of the Lord in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, it so happened that my spiritual master Parashra and Brihaspati both heard him. Text 9. The great sage Parashra, as aforementioned, being so advised by the great sage Pulastya, spoke unto me the foremost of the Puranas, Bhagavatam. I shall also describe this before you, my dear son, in terms of my hearing, because you are always my faithful follower. Purport. The great sage of the name Pulastya is the father of all demoniac descendants. Once upon a time, Parashara began a sacrifice in which all the demons were to be burnt to death because his father had been killed and devoured by one of them. The great sage Vasishtha Muni arrived at the sacrifice and requested Parashara to stop the deadly action. And because of Vasishtha's position and respect in the community of sages, Parashara could not deny the request. Parashara, having stopped the sacrifice, Pulastya, the father of demons, appreciated his brahminical temperament and gave the blessing that in the future he would be a great speaker on the Vedic literatures called the Puranas, the supplements of the Vedas. Parashara's action was appreciated by Pulastya because Parashara had forgiven the demons out of his brahminical power of forgiveness. Parashara was able to demolish all the demons in the sacrifice, but he considered, demons are so made that they devour living creatures, men and animals. But why on that account should I withdraw my brahminical qualification of forgiveness? As the great speaker of the Puranas, Parashara first of all spoke on the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is the foremost of all the Puranas. Maitreya Muni desired to narrate the same Bhagavatam he had heard from Parashara, and Vidura was qualified to hear it because of his faithfulness and his following the instructions received from superiors. So, Srimad Bhagavatam was being narrated from time immemorial by the disciples' succession, even before the time of Vyasadeva. The so-called historians calculate the Puranas to be only a few hundred years old, but factually the Puranas existed from time immemorial before all historical calculations by the mundaners and speculative philosophers. Om Agana Chimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We are hearing about Parampara, how Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Lord Sankarsana at the bottom of the universe. He spoke to the great sage Sanat Kumar of the four Kumaras, Chatushana. And Sanat Kumar explained it to Sankyayana Muni. And when Sankyayana Muni was describing Bhagavatam, Parashara was there, and Parashara spoke it to Maitreya, and Maitreya is now speaking it to Vidura. Prabhupada makes the point that even before the time of Vyasadeva, Srimad Bhagavatam was existing. We hear that Maitreya is eager to speak Bhagavatam to Vidura because Vidura has the right qualifications. He says, I shall also describe this before you, my dear son, in terms of my hearing, because you are always my faithful follower. He calls Vidura his son, not physically, but spiritually. The spiritual parentage is much more important than the material parentage. Sometimes material parentage is combined with spiritual parentage. The famous example being Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In the Vedic civilization, in Vedic culture, families are given much attention because if the family is properly situated, it can perpetuate generation after generation of advanced souls coming into this world. That's why in Srimad Bhagavatam, family lines are glorified. This is not just for the sake of glorifying family lines. No, the family lines are glorious because they foster generation after generation of great devotees of Krishna. Because the families know the art of bringing into the world great souls, therefore generation after generation in that family line is very glorious, and so the family becomes well known as being of such high quality. Still, birth in a very qualified family doesn't automatically qualify the person. Just like you can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita how Advaita Acharya had some sons who were very great devotees and he had some sons who were not. Why should this be a wonder to you? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva Yonashu Kauntea Murtaya Sambhavantaya. Of all species of life, I am the seed-giving father. But not all the sons of the Lord, not all the parts and parcels are cooperative. So why should you be surprised that Advaita Acharya, for example, had some sons who were not what they should be, and he had some sons who were? The point is that sometimes material family and spiritual family coincide. That is ideal Vedic culture. But even in those ideal times, in those ideal situations, there can be discrepancies because that's the nature of the material world. There's always some problem in this world. There's always some deterioration. Krishna himself speaks about this in Bhagavad Gita. Sakalenaha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. I spoke this knowledge in the past, but because of the pressure of time, because of the deteriorating influence of the time potency, the knowledge has become lost. Therefore, I have to speak it again. What does Krishna mean when he says the knowledge has become lost? Not that like books or scrolls have become lost, or the mantras, the shlokas became lost. No. He means the purport became lost. The clear understanding. Just like Prabhupada points out that before Bhagavad Gita as it is appeared in the English language, there were so many English versions of Bhagavad Gita, but no one could understand Krishna. No one took up the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita to become a devotee of Krishna, because the versions of Bhagavad Gita obscured Krishna's message and even tried to get rid of Krishna. Just like the example I always give of the so-called Bhagavad Gita I looked at during my university days. The professor's commentaries, in his commentaries he wrote, Krishna is a concept meant to please both the sentimentalists and the intellectuals. So obviously no one's going to become purified reading those kind of so-called Bhagavad Gitas. So there you have an instance of Bhagavad Gita being widespread in the English language, but no one understood Krishna, and certainly no one was motivated to become a devotee of Krishna. But as soon as Bhagavad Gita as it is appeared, devotees of Lord Krishna sprang up throughout the world. So that shows you what can happen by the pressure of time. The crystal clear meaning of Bhagavad Gita can become lost, even though the shlokas are present. We should not forget about the pressure of time, how it drags things down. Kali Yuga is brought about by the pressure of time in response to the desires of the living entities. It's amazing to understand that there are living entities who actually want the things that Kali Yuga offers. They want all the devilish delights. Therefore, they take birth in such a time so they can fulfill their, or try to fulfill their, sinful desires. By the pressure of time, with each passing day, Kali Yuga deteriorates. Shukadeva Goswami explains, Tatascha anudinam dharmam satyam socham shamadaya kalena balena rajan noshak gayor balam spriti. With each passing day of Kali Yuga, dharma declines. Truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy. Why with each passing day? Kalena balina. Kala, the time potency, has bala, energy, strength. It's pushing like that. Namshap yayo balam shmati. What else is diminishing? Lifespan, strength, memory. Prichit Maharaj understood that time was bringing Kali Yuga. Therefore, he did not fight the curse of the Brahmana boy Sringi. He understood that for Kali Yuga to enter, he had to go. As long as Prichit Maharaj was king, Kali Yuga could not make its entrance. So Prichit Maharaj understood. Kali Yuga has to make its entrance. Bhagavatam needs to be spoken. And it's time for me to go back to Godhead. So therefore he accepted the curse of the Brahmana boy. His acceptance of the curse of the Brahmana boy is an example of forgiveness. Tolerating the upheavals of material life. Just think, he was emperor of the world. Just, as I always say, just think how attached you would be if you were simply the mayor of Wellington. But Prichit Maharaj was the emperor of the whole world. Yet, when he was cursed to die in 7 days, he accepted it so gracefully. What would you do? He left his opulence, he left his family, instantly abandoned everything to sit down and hear the glories of the Lord in the company of sages. his example of forgiveness and tolerance is given in Nectar of Devotion as demonstrating one of the characteristics of Bhava. Bhava is the preliminary stage to praying pure love of Krishna. When the bhava, the preliminary stage of love of Krishna, intensifies, it becomes prema. That bhava has different characteristics that you can see. Preliminary symptoms of ecstatic love of Krishna. One of them is forgiving, tolerant, forgiving nature, a tolerant nature, so much so that someone curses you to die in 7 days and you can not take it so seriously. This is one of the symptoms of preliminary ecstasy, love of God. What did Prichit Maharaj say? To the audience of brahmanas, the audience of sages that surrounded him to watch his departure from this world and to witness his absorption in Krishna consciousness in his final days. What did Prichit Maharaj say? He said to the great sages assembling there, "You all kindly accept me as a completely surrendered soul, and may Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, accept me in the same way. My only desire is to hear the glorious activities of the Supreme Lord. So let whatever magical thing this young Brahmana boy wants to send to kill me, let it happen. Let the snake bird bite me. I don't care. I just desire that I be amidst the hearing and chanting of the glories of Krishna." This is the perfect example of forgiving, tolerant nature. This is one of the symptoms of bhava, preliminary love of God. His example also shows the second symptom of bhava, in that the devotee is anxious that not one moment of time be wasted. Prichit Maharaj was speaking of his eagerness that every moment of his last 7 days would be spent properly. He didn't want a moment to pass without his hearing of the glories of Lord Krishna. As you were saying, Prichit Maharaj understood. Kali Yuga is entering. As long as I'm here as emperor of the world, it's not possible for Kali Yuga to come. So therefore he gracefully agreed to exit. Time had its own way. The shape of events, sometimes people talk about that. They use that expression, shape of events. It has its equivalent in Sanskrit, in the Bhagavatam understanding, Kala Rupa, the form of time. Lord Kapiladeva explains that just like a mass of clouds is unaware of the wind that can blow them and separate them, scattering the clouds here and there, dissipating the clouds. Similarly, the living entity is unaware how his or her life is just a plaything in the hands of time. How many of us think of our life in terms of a fixed lifespan in which we have to accomplish certain things before the next death comes? Most people just think of their life as just some kind of nebulous thing and their main concentration is on how to enjoy their senses at the moment. This is animal life. Animals just live from one moment to the next, moving from one stimulation to the next stimulation, from a pleasing stimulation to an unpleasing stimulation. That is animal life, and that is what you have today amongst the so-called human beings. They are not able to utilize their whole life. They can't even see their whole life as something that should be carefully lived so that they can attain the highest result. They don't see it in that way. They're simply concerned with the feelings that they've had, the feelings that they will get, and that's all. Easily satisfied and easily dissatisfied. Constantly moving between those two poles of so-called satisfaction, which immediately shows itself to be dissatisfaction. But because of the mode of passion, they have to do something. You can't sit still. I'm sure that none of you have tried just to sit still in material life. No, there's pressure to do things. You may remember the pressure that you feel when Friday night comes, or Saturday night. You have to do something. You have to be out doing something. You've got to get your senses into something. If you can't figure out anything else to do, you just find some friends and just go out drinking together and just have to do something to fill the night. You just can't let a night go by in peace. You have to wreck it. You can't sit quietly. You can't be contemplative. You can't reflect upon yourself. You've got to wreck the peace. That is what life is like today. People can't deal with themselves. They don't want to think about themselves. Give me something to distract me. Give me a partner. Give me intoxication. Give me passion. I don't want to have a empty moment in which I might have to think about myself. This is the effect of the mode of passion. And then, of course, that's combined with the mode of ignorance, intoxication. Intoxication gives you an imaginary relief from having to think seriously about your life. People want to be merry. They cannot be merry on their own without intoxication. They have to forget. So the intoxication helps them to forget, and then they can be fools and they think, this is happiness. It's like outside my window. Yeah, in the early hours of the morning, you can always hear like packs of young men and also packs of girls, you know, just walking up the street, just howling and laughing, inspired by intoxication. And you look at them, I can see them out the window, and you can see they're ghostly haunted by this intoxication. There's nothing real substantial going on in their life, but under the influence of intoxication, they can yelp and yowl like that. And that's a successful Friday night or Saturday night. Maybe some of you remember doing it like that. When the intoxication is flowing through your circulatory system, life has meaning. And even small things become funny. And you can, whatever little inhibitions you have, you can easily throw them aside and do stupid things and outrageous things. And then the next week you can talk about it amongst your friends. I can't believe I did that. Oh, man. Amazing. You get a sense of false notoriety.
I really did something stupid last weekend. Oh, really? What was it? I just woke up and there was this person next to me. I didn't know how he got there, how she got there. Oh, cool.
That's the way it is these days. Who's it? Sarah was telling me that at this posh university she went to, one of the great rituals before graduation was that all the students would get together and they would present to each other all the embarrassing things that they did while they were intoxicated during their 4 years at the university. We remember when you did that. And then everybody was, they would get a false sense of value from that.
I didn't know you knew, you all knew that I did that.
They all bring out all the raunchy tales of each other, which everybody knew had gone on, but you know, no one would talk about directly the next day. So, these are the horrors of Kali Yuga. And don't think you'll be immune to it by material methods. You'll be forced to act sinfully by the pressure of time. That's the nature of the time. That you're forced to act in these degraded ways. And even those who have managed to avoid such degradation for some time, they feel guilty, they feel they're missing out on things because of the pressure of time. You've got to get into it. You've got to be degraded like everyone else. You're missing out. Haven't you seen the movies? Haven't you read the books? Haven't you watched television? Passion is everywhere. Why aren't you connecting with it? A recent phenomenon, the past 10 years especially, is that people dive into passion so deeply with the opposite sex, and then they become so frustrated because of unfulfilled desires. Desires can't be fulfilled, so they get frustrated and angry, and then they figure, all right, we'll turn to the same sex. Less trouble. You get your stimulation from the same sex. You don't have to go through all the problems of dealing with the male-female duality. You need sense stimulation? Okay. Get it in the most convenient way. Why go through the male-female trip? Doesn't mean you're homosexual. It just means, you know, you're being practical. Get your skin stimulation however you can. What's the problem? Especially when you're intoxicated. I read some statistics which said that 40% of American university students have had bisexual experiences. Why? Because what the heck? You got an itch? Satisfy it. I mean, you know, this way, that way. No ideology behind it. It's like one devotee was telling me. You know, about life on the North Shore in Auckland. His father's well-situated international businessman. They were living a very tidy, prosperous existence. And then he and his mother, the son and the mother, went somewhere for a family vacation. Not with the father, though. He was busy with his economic development. But while they were gone, the father and the sister of the mother had an affair. So when the mother got back, you know, But the female intuition, she detected that something was amiss. So she got so fried out and so angry and let down by these happenings. My husband having an affair with my own sister. It's like you lose the trust of the husband and also your own sister. It's like a double loss. So she was so devastated and so, how do you say, she became so anti-men because of that. What's the use of these men? So then she decided, I'll be gay. Just because of that. Not because of any genetic propensity, if that's the case. Or not because of any cultural reasons growing up, attaining while growing up. No, just because of, I'm just sick of these men. Why do you have to put up with them just to satisfy your senses? I'll just be gay. It'll be easier. So, that's what happened to her. Just because of that frustration and disgust at having to be humiliated dealing with the opposite sex, going through so much effort, to maintain a home and raise a nice family, and then to lose everything so easily like that. Okay, I've got to gratify my senses. Well, women will do just as good. You don't have to go through all these trips. Skin is skin. The itch is the itch. Be practical. The main thing is to scratch the itch. If I get hung up in, whether it's different gender or not, if the itch gets scratched, then you are a successful member of modern civilization. So this is how it is these days, and this is the pressure that anyone will be under in these circumstances, in this environment. You can't escape it. Those of you who went to university, how intense and massive the pressure is to gratify your senses. You can't be a bona fide student unless you do that. It's like a tidal wave that just hits you. And because the so-called most intelligent persons, those who go to university, are just drowning in this kind of degradation, what hope is there for any leadership in society? What we're trying to do in Krishna consciousness is to develop persons with genuine qualities who can benefit others. First, you have to be able to benefit yourself. So we first try to teach you to respect yourself. You cannot respect yourself if you're just the servant of your senses. You know what that's like when you do the dumbest things to satisfy your senses. You can't respect yourself. You lose your self-respect. And when you lose your self-respect, then you allow anything to happen to you because you don't care about yourself. This is, as I've said several times, this is a big problem these days. You're dealing with people who actually don't care about themselves. So what? You have an itch, you scratch it this way, you scratch it that way, so what? You're bored, you don't understand what life's about, just get intoxicated, so what? That's what they really mean when they protest if you start criticizing with your life. Why are you being negative? why are you always talking about the negative? Behind that attitude is the so what attitude. Why are you getting on our case just because we're trying to be happy in some kind of way, even if it's imaginary? So what? It's a kind of rage. It's a kind of quiet rage. Who do you think you are anyway, criticizing us when we're just doing the needful? We're just being practical. And so what if it doesn't really satisfy us? That's our business. What are you doing, sticking your nose in our business? If we want to be an illusion, so what? It's our business if we want to make believe. Like little kids, you know, when they play. Maybe you remember when you were little kids, one kid played that he was, maybe, I don't know. You know, I don't know what little kids play these days because television is so vile, but when I was a little kid, you know, you play cops and robbers. Some kids were the cops, the others were the robbers. I mean, play cowboys and Indians, or and the girls would play house. I don't do that anymore. And all the little girls back then would have these play stoves and, you know, play cooking utensils. And not anymore. Anyone do that? You did that yourself? Sure, you showed it, yeah. I figured. Can you hear about all of this?
Yeah,
it
could be
out of
there in a playhouse.
In kindergarten, but not at your home, right? You had it at your home? Yes. And the little girls would, you know, I think I remember even the little girls, they would play mommy and daddy. You know, one girl would be the mommy, one would be the daddy, and they would play with the little stove. Yeah? Anyone, you did like that? So they didn't do. They just didn't understand gender differences.
Okay, let's play. You'll be the mommy, I'll be the daddy. Here's the stove, let's cook.
So just like little kids playing different roles, the adults are also like that. And even if it's not real, what does it matter? You have to do something. We'll just play that we're going to be satisfied. Let's go to the cafes. Let's go. You know, Wellington has so many wonderful cultural delights. So many places to eat and drink wine and so many theaters. Ah, let's play. So therefore people become angry when you try to explain to them. They don't want to be disturbed in their ignorance. They don't want to be awakened. They kind of look at you like, who are you to disturb the status quo? Life's bad enough. Even though we know what we're doing is stupid, why can't we just do it? Leave us alone. There's nothing else to do. All right, you're some kind of strange people. You get this special religious high. But we all know that most people can't do that. So why are you on our case? You guys are just the freaks, you know, who just tap into some, you know, spiritual reality or whatever, you know. Okay, even if it does exist, how many people can do that? Very few. Therefore, why are you disturbing the masses who are just doing what they gotta do? This is the attitude these days. People do not want to wake up. What is it that will protect our devotees from this intense tidal wave of degradation? Without chanting Hare Krishna, without taking shelter of Bhagavatam, it's impossible. Sometimes you may just be feeling that when you're walking on the street or driving somewhere. You may just feel, oh, this degradation is all around. Who am I to think I can resist? Just think what I was doing a few years ago. Now I'm supposed to be a saint, really? How long can I withstand this pressure? Sometimes your body scream at you, your mind scream at you. Passion starts to shoot through your mind. You wonder, can I hold on? The apparent appeal of passionate activities is the absorption. I wonder how many of you realize that. Rajagun offers, like, the benediction of absorption. That's what attracts you. You can lose yourself in passion. It's like when you eat something hot. I don't know if you've ever done that. Anyone here eat hot chilies? Or when you go to India, you may get some real hot food. And like, you know, anyone's ever eaten some real hot food? Yeah, it's just like, you know, it's just like, it just literally makes you steam. It practically, the hotness of the food practically consumes your whole mind and body. This is Rajagun. And that's the attractive thing about Rajagun, supposedly. The absorption, that's what you crave. You want to just get into something intensely and powerfully. And in the mode of passion, sex life is that most powerful experience of absorption. That's what you're really looking for. It's not so much the flesh. It's the absorption of your consciousness. Like if you use a steam room. You know, there's a sauna and there's a steam room. You go into a steam room, it's like you're enveloped by steam. That's what Rajagun's like. You can try it sometimes if you go to the Freiburg pool for a swim. They have the steam room. You can go in there and immediately you're saturated by steam. So Rajagun's like that. Your consciousness, your body, your mind just become pervaded with steam. So that is the attractive thing about the mode of passion. Not so much the skin, but the absorption. You get into something. You get into it so much you can feel yourself sizzle. And then, yes, this is what it's all about. Even though it makes no sense, you're attracted to the intensity of the absorption. You know it doesn't make any sense. You know it's got nothing to do with love, but the absorption is so intense that you defend it. Yes, it is love. What you're attracted to is the intensity of the absorption. Total physical and mental absorption, yes. Chili saturating everything. So that's what the living entity is looking for. That intensity of absorption. And so what happens in Krishna consciousness is that because we haven't yet fully learned how to be fully absorbed in Krishna, there's an emptiness, there's a gap that the Rajagun can fill. Therefore, devotees are always trying how to become more absorbed in Krishna's service. If you are not becoming more absorbed in Krishna's service, you leave an empty space for Rajagun, mode of passion, to come in and take your absorption another way. You have to be absorbed in something. That's why throughout the Bhagavatam, there's so many prayers by devotees begging Krishna, please let me become absorbed in devotional service. Just like Kunti prays. Just as the Ganges flows toward the sea without stop, so may my consciousness flow towards you. And, as explained the other day, the famous prayer by Rupa Goswami, the Nectar Devotion. I know young boys are attracted to young girls, and young girls are attracted to young boys. I'm simply praying to you, Krishna, that my mind may be attracted to you in the same spontaneous way. That is the heart and soul of the devotee. Craving for absorption in Krishna's service. when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita about Lord Chaitanya and his associates, you are reading about absorption. You're reading about the depths of the ocean of love of Krishna and how Lord Chaitanya caused that ocean to flood everywhere, even to the lowest unqualified persons. That is absorption. Bhakti yoga is the true absorption of the living entity. Bhakti yoga is not something added from outside. It's not something external or artificial. It is the natural condition of absorption, the actual eternal situation of absorption for all living entities. Lord Chaitanya explains, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Saju Kabunoi Shravanare Shuddha Chite Korayevdoi. Pure love of Krishna is eternally established in the heart of all living entities. It's not added from without. It's already there, dormant. And that dormant love of Krishna can be revived by hearing and chanting about Krishna. What we are doing is trying to revive our natural state of absorption, our eternal state of absorption. The mode of passion beckons and entices, but it cannot satisfy us because the spirit soul is only satisfied being absorbed in Krishna's service. That's why to have an absorbing devotional service is special mercy from Krishna. Devotees should always make sure that they have an absorbing service, that they are absorbed properly in the service they have, that they are properly approaching the service they have so that they can be absorbed. Having a devotional service that absorbs your consciousness is Krishna's special mercy upon you. That's why Prabhupada said that the Krishna consciousness movement should always be a great challenge, something that you have to stretch a bit to attain. And because you have to stretch a bit, you'll depend on Krishna, because you know, ordinarily I can't do such things. That's why for the older devotees and devotees who want to make advancement here, we always try to push them a little bit so they stretch, and that way they have to depend on Krishna more. Depending on Krishna more means you'll get more absorption. Whereas if you just rely on your material propensities and your material abilities, that won't be enough. That won't be absorbing enough. The more you depend on Krishna, the more opportunity you have for absorption. So please understand these things about the mystery of Maya, the bewilderment of Maya. First of all, accept that the material energy is bewildering. That you learn by hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam. You're not dealing with an honest energy. We already explained about Durga Devi appearing to Kamsa and cheating him completely. You're not dealing with an energy that's going to tell it like it is. You're dealing with the illusory potency of the Lord, which fills you with false aspirations and then cheats you. I remember Srila Prabhupada saying very dramatically once, whatever material thing you're attached to, you should know, sooner or later it will kick you in the face. That's the way the material world's constructed. Now, people don't like to hear that. Oh, that's negative. No, it's possible to be fulfilled in life. Not possible. It's just a matter of time before the kick comes. Sometimes people say, oh, but I've gone 20 years without such a kick. They're so small timers, you know. Their standard is so low. Why 20 years? Why don't you learn how to live eternally free from problems? You can only understand this mystery of material existence by hearing. It's otherwise you don't have a chance. To actually understand you're dealing with an energy that's meant to cheat you, meant to bewilder you, meant to beguile you and allure you, that you can only understand by hearing. Otherwise you just look at this world and think you're seeing what it is. Yeah, here we are in the world. It's got some problems. It's got some good things. It's got some things for your senses. It's got some obstacles. Yeah, that's what's going on. But to actually see what this world is requires proper hearing from a proper source. The Vidura has the qualifications. Maitreya is saying that... I shall describe this before you, my dear son, in terms of my hearing, because you're always my faithful follower. That is the process of Bhagavatam. Vidura is the spiritual son of Maitreya. Because Vidura is a faithful son, the relationship between Maitreya and him becomes empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the guru-disciple relationship happens properly, the relationship becomes empowered by the Supreme Lord. So that's more than what you might think it would be standing on its own. Of course, what stands on its own separate from Krishna? But the point is, when the relationship goes on properly, Krishna enters into it. Krishna uses it and empowers the relationship so that the disciple gets everything he or she needs to know to go back to Godhead. And the spiritual master knows everything he needs to know to guide the disciple back to Godhead. That's because of the attitude of the disciple, and of course, it has to be the proper attitude of the spiritual master. Seeing all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels. The genuine guru is always thinking, what can I do that this person can go closer to Krishna? Hearing this Bhagavatam knowledge, we are participating in the most timeless of activities. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Natvevaham jatunasam, natvam neve janadava. Never was there a time when I did not exist. Never was there a time when Arjuna did not exist. Never was there a time when all these kings assembled here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra did not exist. Krishna is eternal, the living entities are eternal, Bhagavatam is eternal. It's not a recent creation. Just as Krishna is always there, Bhagavatam is always there. So any questions?
Shaking over the ignorance. So sometimes when you were preaching, we upset people. And it's quite our best intentions. We're trying to present Krishna consciousness in a way that they will accept. They don't accept it and they become upset. So, is there a proper way to deal with that? Or let people get upset?
Out of compassion, you're trying to give them Krishna consciousness. You're not trying to tell them the truth in order to show your own superiority. You know how sometimes Hare Krishnas can have this know-it-all attitude. You're the conditioned souls. We are the Haris. We know everything. You're in Maya. You're a sense gratifier. We are the saints. You don't even know who Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is. This is kind of a neophyte preaching attitude. We know everything. I've been here 3 months and I know everything. You are the cats and dogs. I am a devotee. That's a very neophyte preaching attitude. You know, we're going to show the karmis that we know everything. We are the Haris. They are the dogs. You actually have to feel compassion. That's what I'm always trying to get at. You try to understand how they are suffering. Think of your own suffering. You should think, without Krishna consciousness, I'd be worse than these persons I'm talking to. What about my own sinful activities? How ashamed I am. Therefore, let me attract the attention of Sri Sri Gaura Nithai by giving their message to others. Gauravani Pracharine. The prachar, the distribution of the instructions of Lord Chaitanya. Gauravani. That's, let me dedicate myself to that, to pay back my debt. Preaching is based on compassion. Not that you want to be a know-it-all. You're praying to Krishna, my dear Lord, please use my tongue to say the things which can motivate these persons to take up Krishna consciousness. If you have that attitude of compassion, and the so much so that the other person can feel it, then you can sometimes say very strong things, but they feel your care. Sometimes even immediately they won't acknowledge, but later they will. So rather than, you know, give some kind of formula, let me just say that everything depends on the compassionate attitude. Out of compassion, out of love for all living entities, you can actually become very firm. How can you do this to yourself? How can you treat yourself in this way? Trash yourself out like this? You're angry at their abusing themselves because they're Krishna's parts and parcels. So they can feel that you actually care about them, that you can't tolerate that they're killing themselves. Maybe they won't respond right away, but they won't forget that. Sometimes you have to say things in which people don't respond to right away. Happens all the time. I remember in England, when
One devotee who some of you from Wellington know. A bit older. She became caught up with this young guy of questionable spiritual status. She's 45, guy's 30. But he wasn't, you know, what? She's initiated devotee, and the guy was just like a really dodgy. And everyone was telling her that, you know, we all know he's got a drug problem and this and that, and can't keep himself together in Krishna consciousness. But, you know, she was hungry. And, you know, she was determined, you know, she was going to be with him. I explained, you know, I said, look, you're 45, he's 30, you know. In 5 years, you'll be 50. You think a 35-year-old man wants to spend his life with a 50-year-old woman? Get real. This is just a recipe for disaster. It's just an idea of Maya. Your senses are feeling pressed. And, you know, you're latching on to anything without thinking. You're about to be an old lady. This guy's a young man. He'll be 35 and still, you know, at the peak of his passion, and you'll be 50. What 35-year-old man wants to be the 50-year-old woman? He'll be 40. You'll be 55. Forget it. Oh, but she argued back. Oh, no. I don't go for the age. I go for the person. That was supposed to really impress me. It's not the age, it's the person. That's supposed to be a very profound, deep statement. I said, furthermore, you know, besides the crazy age difference, you know, he's not even fixed up in Krishna consciousness. You know, everybody's saying he's got a drug problem. Oh, but, you know, I can fix that, you know. Just some, you know, good attention and, you know, good association with me. He'll be okay, you know. Someone appointed her to be on this mercy mission, you know. So I said, you know, look, this is destroying you. This is an embarrassment to me. You just took initiation 3 months ago. Why do I have to hear this? Did you approach any senior householders for guidance about this? Well, you know, why do I have to, you know, tell you the obvious, you know? Anyway, she persisted. Carried on with the affair. Fell down. The guy took money, stole all her money out of her bank account. Still, she was holding on. Yeah. I'm gonna go overseas with him to where he's from, and, you know, yeah, I know he's got a drug problem, but I'm going to work on that. This is even after he's taken all our money from our bank account. You know. I said, are you a professional counselor? Do you know what it's like to get someone to give up drug addiction? Do you have that experience? Do you have that psychological understanding? No, but it all takes is affection. I'm going to go with him and we'll try it out. So what about, you know, you just took some initiation vows. Yeah, well, when I took them, I really meant it. But just later, these desires came. So anyway, she did all that, and just 2 days ago, I get a letter. Well, I'm back. You were right. Everything happened just as you said. Amazing, Guru Maharaj. I mean, you really understood what was going to happen. You must be some kind of mystic or something. Remember the story I told you about, you know, the fool sitting on the limb of a tree and sawing it, and someone's passing by and saying, "Hey, fool, you know, you keep sawing that limb you're sitting on, you're going to fall off it." You know, the fool, you don't understand. You don't know. And of course, the fool kept sawing, and the limb, you know, fell off, and the fool crashed to the ground. And the person, the passerby, was watching. So the fool said to the passerby, "How did you know this? You must be a psychic." So these kind of things make for unnecessary anxiety. I remember when I was telling her quite strongly, "Don't do this, this is what's going to happen," I was thinking, she may not listen now, probably she won't listen now, but in the future she may remember that I said, you know, this is a bad idea. And maybe that will contribute in some way to her spiritual advancement in the future after she wrecks herself for a while. I remember I was telling this to Krishnaloka and Guru Vani, and I remember in the past Krishnaloka would react very like, "Just see how stupid." But now she just kind of, yeah, "That's just the way they are." That's the way the species is. I would hope not. So that's an example of sometimes you have to tell somebody something in terms of a future hope. In any case, compassion is the basic principle. There's no formula. And don't be a know-it-all Hare Krishna. We know. You don't know. Feel for their situation. And of course, what do we have to feel superior about? Without Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we'd be even worse than the people we're talking to. That's the answer to your question. Pray to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Ichinana, you can develop compassion. That's the basis of sankirtan, is the basis of preaching and cultivating others. You feel for their situation. Then your intelligence will be empowered based on compassion. How can you just stand there and let these people destroy themselves? It's not possible. Of course, sometimes unintentionally preaching can lead you into funny situations. You know, it happens like that. Happened to me Sunday. I was talking to one young man, and yeah, he had started to chant Hare Krishna, and so I was encouraging him to chant, and I was saying, "Well, you know, if your life is free from the basic vices, the chanting will go better." And you probably don't have any of those vices, you know. And, you know, you're involved in animal rights, so I'm sure you're a vegetarian, and yeah, no problem, you know, vegan. And I'm sure you, you know, yeah, intoxication, no, gambling, forget it, you know. But there was one other thing. I said, well, you know, come on. You know what that's all about. So you got a girlfriend? I said, well, yeah. I said, well, anyway, just tell her, you know, you're retiring from these affairs and got better things to do. And I didn't realize that the girl standing next to him was the girlfriend. Why? Because I had seen her carrying some kids. I think, you know, Stu. Yeah. I thought that was his wife. So I just assumed that she was there listening, you know. I didn't realize that was his girlfriend, you know. The guy's girlfriend, you know. So she, he kind of, you know, after I was saying that, he kind of looked over at her. And she was kind of looking at me like. So I just, well, you know, you agree, right? It's just the same old thing, right? He said, well, I don't know about that. You know, it's not really love, right? So I had to, I had to kind of find something to say. And anyway, I just kept on, you know, like nothing happened, you know. I just kept on talking, you know. And then I switched it to explain the situation from her point of view. Said, you know, a woman should always have give off an aura of being unattainable. A woman should always have a sense of mystery about her that protects her from the exploitation by men. And I explained to her that if a woman just leaves the door open, you know, it's natural men are going to take advantage because that's the way it is, you know. So a woman always should have an air of being unattainable, a mystery, a bit unfathomable. And that's for her protection and also protects the men. So I said, anyway, you want to be with him? He wants to be with you? Then tell him he has to marry you. She said, well, I don't know if we're ready for that. You know, I may give facility, but I don't know if we're ready for a marriage. So anyway, I kept on preaching that. We need to get all aspects of our life together, not just be an activist and a protester against one small segment of Kali Yuga. We've got to, you know, be holistic in our activism and get all aspects of our life together. Because they were some of Sue's activist friends. So I said, why don't you just pick out one area and you're activist about that, protesting about that. Why not the whole of life? So I explained, by chanting Hare Krishna and following the regular principles, you'll be properly situated in your activism in terms of everything. And then I was a bit surprised at the end, the girl started to say, well, actually, you know, I'm the one who's reading Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, he's not reading, I'm reading it. But she kind of came to life at the end and I kind of got off the hook. So, yeah, sometimes these funny things happen when you... I just didn't know. I just thought I'd seen her with chasing these kids around. I just assumed that was, you know, she was their mother, and Stu was there telling me about his wife and how he had gotten married. So I thought, well, that's her. She's chasing around his kids, you know. So sometimes these funny things happen. What else could I do? I just had to, that's her. That's the girlfriend. I just kind of went on like if nothing happened. Oh. So you understand, right? It's just the same old thing, right? Well, I don't know about that. I also ignored that one. It just kept on going. It's not real love, right? I don't know, man. I just kept going. So sometimes these funny things happen. Anything else? Yes?
What did Peter do before Dr. Chaitanya's mercy in between the start of Kali Yuga and Dr. Chaitanya appearing? In terms of separation.
In terms of what?
Separation, understanding, becoming free from Kali Yuga.
You had to have some qualification in order to practice bhakti yoga. And more esoterically, there was no realization of Madhurya Ras before Madhavendra Puri, who's the spiritual master of Ishvara Puri, who's the spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. Madhavendra Puri planted the seed of ecstatic love of Krishna, which grew into the tree of Lord Chaitanya. But speaking basically, in order to practice bhakti yoga, you had to have a pious background. You had to have high qualifications of purity before you could even take up Krishna consciousness. But when Lord Chaitanya came, he made the treasure house of love of Krishna available to everyone, even the lowest. Even, especially, the Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions, even the lowest of the student community. The Bengali term is Adama Paduya, lowest of the student community. Lord Chaitanya made Krishna consciousness available to them. Anything else? Yes? If Krishna decides to be extraordinarily merciful to you, yes, you can get an honorary degree, get an honorary PhD. You know anyone who's got an honorary PhD? Yeah, it happens. Not too common. Generally, it's a gradual process because of hearing the Hare Krishna mantra. By hearing the Hare Krishna mantra, you're able to see everything in relation to Krishna. And by your efforts to distribute Krishna consciousness to others, based on compassion, your vision gradually becomes empowered. Because preaching, distributing Krishna consciousness, is the very act of recognizing that others are Krishna's parts and parcels, and you're seeking to remind them of this. So certainly, if Krishna is going to allow the unqualified people of Kali Yuga to have him, certainly he'll allow the preacher to have him. So certainly this vision will come to one who endeavors to spread Krishna's glories to others. That's what gives you potency, your realization, based on trying to serve Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya will reward you with the proper vision. Then you'll start to become greedy for Krishna. Look at this person. This person is meant for Krishna's pleasure.
Have you felt that yet? It's fun to be greedy for Krishna. You can look at someone and think, this person's meant to serve Krishna. Krishna has to have this person back. It's transcendental lust. Lusting to satisfy Krishna's senses. Anything else? Yes? Humility. When you want to do something well, you're always ready to hear advice about how to do it better. When something is dear to you, you're always ready to consider how to improve. Because you want to do what's dear to you better. And you have to have some basic understanding of the illusory energy. As we were saying, Maya is not what it looks like she is. The material energy is a cheater. So when you're dealing with a cheater, you have to be careful. Just like suppose you're about to sign to buy a car or sign a mortgage for a house. Don't you go get advice? Because you're worried, oh, maybe I'm being cheated. Okay. Have you ever bought a used car? So weren't you afraid of being cheated? So what did you do? Right. You went to a car lot, or you... private sale. Private sale. At the lots, every used car salesperson knows, you know, when a lady comes along to buy a used car, their day is made. They just say, isn't this car painted so nicely? It's got a beautiful pink color. Oh yes, the color, I really like it so much. Look at the tires, they're clean. Oh yes, this is the car for me. I know this from being a little kid because my father was, to get extra income, would sell used cars, you know, at the side of the house. But he would always pose himself to the people that, you know, this is just a family car he's getting rid of. You know, because if they simply knew he was a dealer, they would, you know, get skeptical. So he would just get these bombs and get a fresh paint job put on them, and, you know, and then whenever any of the kids were naughty, he would make us, you know, polish the chrome or things like that. And that was the punishment, the official punishment in the house. Go polish the chrome on that car out there. So I remember you just get these junky cars, but just put a fresh coat of paint on and polish the chrome and, you know, change the seat covers. And then I would see people show up in response to the ad in the newspaper, and three people would come at once, and I would see someone just start practically fighting over who could buy the car. So that's the way Maya is. You're not seeing the material energy for what it is. You're seeing the artificial sweet covering. once you understand that's how Maya is, you don't see it for, you don't see the mental energy for the danger that it is, then you're always ready to take advice. Just like when you were buying the used car. Well, I could be cheated. I don't know if I'm seeing everything in this car. I better get some advice. Or you take it to the AA and get them to check it out. So you have to have that attitude about Maya in general. Otherwise, if you say dumb things like, you know, I go for the person, not the age. What is my hope for you? So when major decisions like that come along, we should always have devotees who are reliable advisors. Suppose it never happened to you, then you can call up Dandiyala and Guru Mani. Just let me get real. But it feels right. Get real. It seems right. And then probably after, you know, intense couple of hours, you know, all right, if you say so, yeah, maybe. That's what it's like when you have advisors. At first, you know, you're really into what you're into. Yeah, yeah, this is right. This is good. This is necessary. But if you have good advisors, they can calm you down after a while. Not at first. You know, everybody has to fight back at first. Now, you don't understand. I know, you know, such a situation as this has failed all the times before, but this is different. We all have to understand our weakness before Maya and have precautionary measures in place. She is Shoda.
Oh, I saw this person, and I mean, just the artistic way that he dresses. I mean, just, I can't get it out of my mind. And he's also an artist too.
These things happen, you know. Just like you were saying the other day, like, well, you know, that's just the way it is. You don't even get disturbed by it anyway. You just like, yeah, that's the way they are, you know? Whereas before, I remember a few years ago, how could they be so stupid? You go give it a whole tirade. Why are they being so dumb? How can they let the men exploit them like this? How can they be just such fools for victimization? She'd be ready to start a whole protest demonstration. Now she just says, I don't know. Guru Mani her just kind of smile like. But if you have persons you can approach for impartial advice and you accept it, it saves you from a lot of trouble. Later you realize, oh boy, I was about to do something really stupid. So if amongst the ladies they're able to have that kind of access to sober advice, it can save them a lot of trouble.
All right. All glory shall come.